Just a nice warm day, you know, me and the boy hanging out.
That's cool. What do y'all do when you hang out?
We watch a little F1. We watch the qualifying for F1. We went to the park and played on the swings and the slide and stuff. And then we went to the friendly soccer game,
Okay.
friendlies soccer game for the school.
Do you say F1? Have you exposed your son to NASCAR yet?
No, I don't want him to be exposed to racing that goes around in an ellipse
What? Why not?
an ovoid or whatever. It's just, I don't know. I'm barely into the F1 stuff. My kid likes the sound of race cars, as I've talked about before, and it'll hold his attention for a little while. And it'll hold my attention for a little while, and just, but I don't like racing. Like, I'm not like a racing guy. I never have been.
It's F1, just they drive really fast down one lane of
They
traffic.
drive really fast, but then they make the courses with tight turns, so then they have to drive slow, and then they drive fast again, Connor. Yes.
So that's
There's a
not just an ellipses, it's just like.
no, there's lots of zigzags in it, I guess, is what I'm saying. And they go all around the world to different countries and different tracks, and they compete on there. And it's like every race is like a full weekend, because they have Saturday they have the sprint race, which is like a very short race, like a 12 lap race. And then they do qualifying, where they try and hit the best times to see who's going to be in, what position, right? Like first, second, third, where you start on the grid. And then Sunday is the race, and the race takes like 3 or 4 hours or something. It's a long time.
Okay. That sounds boring to me.
It's not great. The highlights on YouTube are not bad, especially when the cars crash. That's really fun. And when they fuck up and drive into each other, I like that a lot.
I'm about to do a little reveal here. Every now and then I give a tidbit about my life. There was something on the last episode about the Disney movie that I've been exposed to the most that revealed like how
Yes.
country my upbringing was. Now here's another one. My dad was for many, many years in a NASCAR fantasy league.
That's really cool, man.
And he was, it wasn't just like, yeah, I don't know, I'm just trying it out. He's like, I've been waiting for this. And he made some
Yeah.
money. He made some money off NASCAR.
Oh my God. Wow. And yeah, everybody's got their thing, man. I mean,
Yeah.
there's you have to you
I
when you get
fucking
off work.
hated it. I was forced to watch so much NASCAR.
You get off work, there's got to be something that you're excited for the weekend, right? Otherwise, you're going to kill yourself 100%, right?
Yeah, well, it was like NASCAR at my dad's and watching baseball on television. Only thing worse is watching golf,
It
because it's
puts me
just
to sleep.
like,
I was going to say both of those are great sleep aids. Like the sound of like baseball announcers or golf just puts me right to sleep. It's such a good like afternoon nap time like programming.
we're getting to that age for afternoon nap. I mean, you have a kid, so I imagine your nap's like kicked off.
I tried today, but I couldn't fall asleep. I'm still not good at napping during the day.
Yeah, I don't nap.
Unless I just have a couple brewskis, but then I'm not getting up. I'm just done for the rest of the day.
Well, that's not what people are tuning into this podcast for. Your
What
boring
are they
ass
tuning in
life.
for? Yeah, so let's before we blast off here, before we start the
Okay.
podcast, Connor,
Are we doing announcements?
we can do announcements. So my life is about to get a little bit. So my life is about to get more complicated because, unfortunately, listener, we have to fire Connor from the podcast.
Yeah, I was at Alex's house and I took a shit on his desk and he caught me.
There's poop everywhere, and we're not friends anymore. And this
We're
is
not,
the
yeah.
episode where we tell you that.
Yeah, the propaganda is over because we're actually not friends. And hey, could we have just like stopped doing the podcast and people just like ask like, hey, whatever happened to that? No, we owe you for, 56 episodes now. We owe y'all for tuning in loyally to explain that we're stopping the podcast because Alec is firing me.
Yeah, we're gonna have a public crash out, as the kids say, I think. We're gonna have beef on the pod.
Get ready. I called you Alec Only Fanner on Twitter.
He's only in it for the money, y'all.
Yeah.
He doesn't care about the podcast game. No, I'm having another kid. kid, and my life's going to get, you know, some amount more complicated, and I foresee that I'm not going to be able to devote a lot of time to the podcast, which, if you are a loyal Propagandas listener, you've noticed that that's been true for a couple months now.
Yeah, it's been getting hard. I mean, that's the real life. We don't do this for any money. We don't have a Patreon. We really only do it for ourselves, and we put out episodes that we think are good. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
And Connor keeps shitting in my house, and so we're not friends anymore. So then we're just doing it for ourselves.
Right? But to be fair, I'm shitting in your house because I'm so mad that you're having another kid. I'm like a baby. I'm like a pet that's jealous that you're bringing a baby into the house.
You're one of those Redditors. Who are the ones that, like, antinatalist Redditors that are like, I can't stand children? This is like your version of that.
I just wrote crotch spawn all over the walls of the house.
And poop. So real quick, I mean, things are getting fairly dire in terms of, like, the ambient levels of Hitler apologia that, like, are going on. Was it the last week now? I mean, the Tucker Carlson had fucking Nick Fuentes on.
I'm sorry I called you gay, by the way.
And then the Heritage Foundation responded with this thing that they've now retracted that was basically like, you know, we just don't, we're in very trying times now, Connor, us, the Heritage Foundation. And we just don't think it's important to attack people on the right. And it's like, it's a neo-Nazi. He's like a vowed neo-Nazi.
Yeah. Let's not forget J.D. Vance just making apologies for that text chain from the young Republicans. It's like, these are young men. It's like they're 3 years younger than you. They're in their like fucking 40s. What are we doing here?
Yeah.
Or late 30s.
Our age. And it's like, these young boys should not have their lives. Anyway.
Which means open season, folks. You can say whatever the fuck you want, and no one will fire you unless it's about.
Yeah. What is going on?
Honestly, it's the women.
There's allegations there too, longstanding on Mr. Carlson. So, anywho, I don't know. Things are weird. Things are fucked up. So we thought we would take the occasion to kind of turn back the clock a little bit to before Trump 2, right, and do a classic style episode. This is like a return to the Biden era for me. We're getting libtarded, folks, because this fucking film is, boy howdy.
It's very lib. We are, of course, talking about House of Dynamite.
House of Dynamite, which is very awkward, right? Just like putting that
of Dynamite
putting that article at the front of, it's not the Lord of the Rings, right? Like, it's a House of Dynamite, which is like a phrase. It's not even a phrase. Anyway, this feels like a movie, I think, from like a different time.
This is Obama era Zerpslop for sure.
Yeah, and we'll talk about the plot in a little bit, but like it involves the president of the United States, right? Which they got Idris Elba to play.
Idris,
which Idris, I always call him Idris Elba. Idris Elba, Idris.
Idris Elba.
Idris Elba. Idris Elba. I don't like him. I'll never invite him to the White House. He'll never be president.
What was his What was his fucking name? Oh, they called him Stringer Bell, a nasty man. He tried to betray Avon Barksdale, but Avon got to him first, folks. Avon
I
got
call
to
him
first.
Stinker Bell. So Idris Elba plays the president, and I guess one of the more striking things about the film is how like outlandish being in the White, because a lot of it takes place in the White House, like either in the Situation Room or in the underground bunker or like with the president on the monster, whatever they call the stupid armored car, right, on Marine One. It's a cavalcade of fun locations that that people that follow the presidency and know about, you know, presidential life will recognize, I guess. And like in the era where there would be like construction on the, you know, the ballroom, right? Like in the background, this does feel very kind of like trite. Oh, it, wow, like very yeah. wish fulfillment, right? Where it's like, you know, a journalist carefully assembling before like a press conference thing to hear the news from the president. It's just like very, yeah. Like, I mean, it just, it feels like the West Wing to me or something, right? Like,
it, yeah, it, this is very much a movie for the people that really, really love the West Wing. It's got that kind of walk and talk. Like there's always mm-hmm. the camera. It's
shaky
a
cam, like a motherfucker. Holy
oh
hell.
My gosh. The shaky cam. It got the shaky cam was so intense that, my buddy Corbo, who I was watching it with, he turned like, we bought it and he turned to me like, how do you feel about this? It was that prevalent throughout the entire film and very annoying, very distracting.
There are shots because a lot of it takes place literally in like office space, right? Like literally one of these like open concept, like a bunch of computer screens and a bunch of like desks lined up style.
It looks like government. Yeah, it looks like any movie you've ever seen with like NASA involved, like Apollo 13, just like that open or the big screen.
Control room. Yeah,
a control room. Everyone's in a fucking control room.
And there are shots in it that are like from weird angles, like almost like from the side and slightly like below a desk, like you were watching The Office, right? Which like the play in The Office is they are being recorded by like a film crew, right? So when they do these like surreptitious shots, right, when the camera sees something it shouldn't see, it comes from an angle that like reminds you, right, that like the film crew is hiding. It doesn't make any sense in this film.
That's,
right? It's like very distracting.
It's so funny you're saying that because Corbo also mentioned that. He's just like, this feels
really?
Like a mockumentary.
Okay.
This feels like
yes.
I'm watching
yes.
The Office. Like he kept half expecting someone to turn the camera and go,
Yeah, do the gym face. Yeah, Connor's doing the gym face into the camera. Which is especially funny given how insanely weighty this film like attempts to be. So this is, by the way, directed by Catherine Bigelow of Hurt Locker fame and Zero Dark 30, right? This is by the way, a CIA friend of the CIA, Catherine Bigelow. So like I think Catherine Bigelow, like between those two, like, you know, I think very well known, if not like well acclaimed movies, I think the Hurt Locker was like resoundingly like a pop culture reference for like a long time before. I think now that people watch it, I think it just like leaves a bad, at least for me, it leaves a bad taste in my mouth. And like, but at least it was very like vibrant. It's a film where a lot of stuff happens and it's very visceral. Right. And say what you will about Zero Dark 30. Right. And I think like Zero Dark 30 played as a comedy when we last watched like Warfare. Like,
yeah.
That's more of like the kind of film that I wish Zero Dark 30 was, where it was just like slapstick and goofy because a lot of slapstick should happen. But like even that film, I think captured, a lot of like imagination and was very visceral for audiences. This is like a wet fart. This fucking movie is awful. Catherine Bigelow, what the fuck are you doing?
Okay, so spoilers for A House of Dynamite.
Yeah, spoilers. We're just, yeah.
But
yeah.
The plot of this film is somebody, we never figure out who, launches a nuclear weapon, I guess a missile, towards America.
An ICBM, yeah.
ICBM. Launches an ICBM towards America, and it is set to land in Chicago. And Rashomon style, not even Rashomon style, because it's not even from like different people's perspective. It is,
we'll
like,
talk about that in a sec, yeah.
Well, Rashomon does feel like this is how I remember it.
Yes.
Whereas opposed to this movie, like it probably had presented itself with Rashomon styles, like not quite, because you're just showing like what actually happened in three different locations, not how different.
Rashomon is three. Well, I think it's four actually, right? Because then there's the ghost that also has a take. It's three.
Everyone's
or four
got a
different
take now.
Yeah. It's even ghosts have a take. It's three or four different versions of the same event through a perspective that paints it differently, right?
Yeah.
That illustrates that event in a totally different way, right? As points of view are. And the plot vehicle for this film and its different takes, because it literally cuts and resets and cuts and resets mm-hmm. three times. Well, I mean, I guess it resets twice, whatever. It's all based on the fact that all of the people in the film will be on one of these like Zoom style control room like phone calls, right? So it's literally the same events, right? So you keep hearing the same lines, just like either live or on a telephone, basically, right? Like telephonically, and then you're in the room with different people as this happens. This is not the same thing, right? You do not get a different perspective in a different narrative perspective. You just get a different standpoint of listening to a Zoom call, right?
Yeah, it's pretty boring at times. One thing that I said about this movie is that the nuclear bomb goes off and it leads up to the very second that the bomb hits.
Well, we don't know if the nuke goes off. We don't even know if it's a nuke.
That's right.
There's nothing. It just ends, right?
There's one line in the beginning of the film where they say, like, hey, we're having a drill today. They're like, really? And so this could even be a drill. It could all be fake. A drill that even the president is not aware of. You know, we have no idea. But this movie, to what you were saying about the Zoom call stuff, like down to certain lines that are said, just like you hear a sound on a Zoom call and someone goes, what was that? And then it's not shown.
And then you find out later what it was.
Yeah. And it's just not that interesting. But however, Alec, I do want to give Bigelow some credit here is that it was very, very good at getting me to the edge of my seat for a second, and then it just – you got no emotional release. You're just like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I guess it's going to – and that first one where you're, like, watching the bomb, like, the timer go down, you're like, holy shit, like, what's going to happen? Like, how's this – and then it cuts to black. You see a title pop up, and it's basically, like, part two. And this you see it from a different – from the FEMA perspective, I believe.
This is like the film version of literally like getting masturbated and then they're like, I have to go. And they like, it's like, it's edging, right? Where there's just
somebody,
somebody
else comes in to finish the job, but they don't get it done. And you do that three times and nothing happens.
And you just go to bed. Yeah.
Yeah. And okay. You just see Anthony Ramos kneeling going like, ah,
it's okay. I don't even know where to go from there.
It just wasn't that great. It definitely hit that, like, one thing that I really, really, really did like about this movie, and I think more movies about the military should do this, is they wasted no fucking time explaining what a building was. They didn't waste any time explaining what an acronym was. Nothing. This movie, the script did not spoon feed anything to you. When it said an acronym, that acronym popped up on screen, extended, and then it like filled out what it was. So you were looped in without them wasting time. Like, why would your coworker that you've been working with for 10 years have to explain to you what this acronym is? Right.
It's laden with basically acronyms, right? In the military style. I think that's kind of, I mean, I guess I appreciated that. I was just so distracted with how kind of bored or annoyed I was that
there's a lot wrong with this movie that makes it like I had to really sit and remember what I did like about this movie, which there was a very tough, it's a great cast.
So let's briefly like touch on the cast. Like so Idris Elba obviously plays Mr. President, right? Rebecca Ferguson, if you remember her from Dune.
I got to say, you don't find out that it's Idris Elba until the third act. So
that's true.
The first time, the president's Zoom is never turned on. So you're just like, who's the president? I wonder who it is. And my guess
he's a black screen. He's a guy with no webcam.
Just like the camera's like, wait, like when your dad FaceTimes, he's like, what's going on? All the way up. But I did, me and my buddy were like, all right, who do you think it is? And I was like, Henry Winkler. That's who it is.
but the cast is like actually very good. Like Rebecca Ferguson's in it, who I like from Dune. She's in like the later, Mission Impossible movies. Jared Harris, is a famous British actor and like screen actor. And you know him and love him from like everything. He's in Mad Men. I think he's in like the Sherlock Holmes movies. He was in Chernobyl. He was
Moriarty.
In Tinker Taylor. Yeah. Moriarty.
Yeah. Moriarty.
Moriarty. The evil Irishman. And then Jason Clarke's in it, who's like very good.
He's so good.
Who, by the way, recently he was in this crazy thing that that my wife put on about this like real life insane family murder thing from South Carolina, which he was incredible in. The Murdoch, Murdoch.
He's so good. He's great in Oppenheimer. He's the lawyer that's just like yelling at Oppenheimer the whole time.
So you'll know, like these are like I would argue like B-list and A-list actors, right, that are like participating in this. Annoyingly, right, just like off the cuff, I will say Netflix especially has this problem where I assume they have like a short list of actors that they have like on contract or something. And I think they do a lot of filming in the UK. There's a lot of British actors and or European actors, I should say. Rebecca Ferguson, I think, is like Swedish, that are doing Americans. And they are not good at it, right? Like Idris Elba is pretty passable. You can only notice a little bit. Jared Harris is not, right? He plays the Secretary of Defense and he sounds like an Englishman half the time. Rebecca Ferguson is not good. No, Jason Clarke is okay, right?
Her, like, her these people are bad. Yeah.
And as like a burger brain, sorry, right? Like get some fucking Americans in there, man. This is very distracting whenever they're like, oh, right? And it's just like, that's not how people say that word, man.
Idris really is the only one who pulls off the American accent. I got to give it to him.
And it's like from, by the way, like from, I would say like from the beginning, because like a lot of the first act revolves around Rebecca Ferguson is like, I don't know, some kind of head of the situation room planning room. Mm-hmm. She talks a lot and you really, really get the, you're like, so there's just a British person running like internal White House, like top secret shit, I guess.
I don't know. So this is something that's very funny to me. This happens throughout the movie where all the main characters in this film work for the government in a capacity such that if they tell you, hey, listen to me, you need to listen to them, right? Like,
yeah.
If my fiance was like, hey, I work at the Department of Big Time Danger. If I call you, you know, listen to me. I'm like, you got it. And if I were the people in this room and my fiance called me from the Department of Big Bad Danger, like, you need to listen to me. You need to get out of town. I would go, what? Who is this? Hey, what's going on? What do you mean I need to evacuate? No, like if your partner works at the Department of Big Bad Trouble and they say, get out of town, you're like, you got it. We've had this conversation.
Exactly.
If you do so many drills for the Situation Room, you know that you're like looping your family into these drills. I'm working up the courage to, okay, so I've got the thing that my fiance thinks I'm crazy about, but I'm introducing 18 word passphrases that need to be recited if an AI bot ever calls and demands that she wire money to a different account.
That's very funny.
There were several of these passphrases for each person in my life. AI, you can never impersonate me.
I haven't gotten mine, Connor.
Well, we're not friends anymore because I keep pooping all over your house.
I forgot about that. The bit that we did from earlier. So
in universe, in the propaganda universe, we are not friends. But in real life,
you're reminding me that like this is a thing that those like the crazy right wing Armageddon movies actually do fairly well. Where like they'll text their loved one just like a phrase like go or something, and they'll immediately like know they've talked about it, they have the go bag, they put all the guns in the car, right? Like they have, and that like, I mean, that is insane, right? But it's also like it's very like illustrative of the mindset of the characters, right, in a way that like I have a lot more respect for, right?
It's very funny in Homestead of like when the dad is like, Operation Jade Helm has been enacted or whatever. And the mom is just like, let's go, baby.
Let's go, baby.
Their son is like, but tonight is prom. What are we going to do? Yeah.
I was going to get edged watching House of Dynamite.
So, of course, I mean, you mentioned the edging thing, and the big two edging moments of this movie are we never get to see the bomb go off, and we never get to find out who fired the bomb. Mm-hmm. And there is some like they probably Catherine Bigelow probably like consulted with someone at The Economist or some kind of Harvard think tank. Like, hey, can you give me like a really plausible several plausible contingencies on why North Korea would attack despite knowing that blowback would be coming their way? Right. And they kind of listed out as like, you know, the North Koreans could probably bomb us in this location and they would expect retaliation, but it would make them look weak. And therefore, they could turn to the rest of the world and ask for, you know, unlimited aid in exchange for no further bombing. And they really, really listed out. It's like, and what if it was Russia? I don't know.
Yeah, it's extremely one, like the plot The plot on this is like extremely contrived and they just kind of leave it open, which if this film was better than it is, I think I would like kind of accept, right? As like, if you're trying to do, and we'll talk about this later, like a little bit, but like, if you're trying to do an analysis just of, basically if you're trying to just like frame the device of nuclear annihilation and like what this means outside of like imagining a country that you already dislike audience, right? I think I would appreciate this more, but like the weird thing about the script is they're trying to be ambiguous, right? Like in the plot, the missile, right, this ICBM or whatever is detected like so far up that they can't ascertain where it comes from, I guess, or maybe it's launched from the water. We don't know, but basically it's from, you know, Eastern Asia, right? So there's like basically three culprits. It's the fucking North Koreans, it's the Chinese, or it's the Russians, right? And so the film both tries to leave it somewhat ambiguous by not saying that. And the characters say, we don't know. And they say, we don't know over and over and over again. But then, right, when asked, like, why would the North Koreans do it? They do like exactly what you're saying. Like the Economist, like, yeah. Well, they literally call a Korean lady like and have it explained to them that actually the regime is doing very poorly now and it's possible that they blah 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 blah, and this like very canned kind of like movie script reasoning for why the North Koreans have essentially committed suicide, right? Which yeah. The film also acknowledges, right? Like this doesn't make any fucking sense.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Yeah. So either you, to me, right, like a failure of the script writing and of the film itself is like either leave it totally ambiguous to where we don't know anything. We should not even attempt to like surmise a logic to this. Just analyze the situation as it exists now, right? Like, what do we do about this? And should you, American, think more about, I guess, like impotently about like what our retaliation policy is for nuclear weapons, right? Or do Red Dawn, right? Just say the North Koreans launched a fucking missile at us because they're evil, right? And now we're debating whether or not it's good to fire back or something. Like I can't stand, and that's what I mean when I say like it feels like a return to another time where like you want to set up, you want to be quote unquote realistic, or maybe you actually have like a kind of ideological disposition to how you want to frame this geopolitically. But at the same time, you don't want to bash people over the head and feel like you're just like overtly a warmonger to any particular country, I guess. Yeah. Right. So you leave it ambiguous. And that kind of like mealy mouthedism is, it feels like Obama era shit to me. And it's like, I'm glad that died.
I'll say I have a slightly different take on this. And it's that, this movie set out what, or this movie accomplished what it set out to do, which is Catherine Bigelow wants to make a movie about what would the people in charge do if America were attacked. And, you know, through the course of the movie, there are countermeasures. You know, we do have a missile defense system.
Yes. Yep.
But it goes to shit. And they do reveal that, like, this has a 62% chance of success. And we find out, like, oh, so everything's going wrong.
More on that later, by the way. More on that later.
Every single thing is going wrong. And so the movie's goal is, doesn't matter who it is, I just want to portray, like, what would it look like realistically? Like, this is not a post-apocalyptic film. This is an apocalyptic film. But it just didn't do it for me. It wasn't that interesting. Maybe the framing of the three different, like, quote-unquote Rashomon-style approaches to the story wasn't the proper container for this. Because she did her research. You know, she got – it's Catherine Bigelow. She's got CIA insiders. She's got government insiders. Yeah. She has the connection to make this as accurate as possible. And it wasn't interesting. And maybe that is why we need that villain. However, we didn't need it in Top Gun. And Top Gun was badass.
Yeah.
We had, well, again, we had explosions.
Top Gun is visceral. Top Gun, if you do – I assume you mean Top Gun 2. It doesn't really matter which one you mean.
I mean, both are good.
If you do filming from the outside of a fucking F-18, it's gonna rule, right? Unless you're flying at 30,000 feet and nothing happens. But like, if you're ripping fucking F-18s through like valleys and stuff, you could just release that footage and I would watch it, right? I would probably pay to watch that footage.
Yeah.
You put it in a film with a ambiguous, you know, evil guy. I can't even remember. Is it like it's supposed to be Iran? I think maybe.
They just say
it doesn't matter.
They only say the enemy. They never.
Exactly. It rules. Yeah. And this, like, they don't show you anything. And to that end, right, like you're saying, like, it's an apocalypse film. The apocalypse is, like, entirely hypothetical, right? Like, it's an apocalypse in this film is portrayed as looking at a screen and then a number popping up that says, you know, greater Chicago area, 9 million people, which, by the way, I mean, this is a nitpick. Sorry. But, like, North Korea, I don't believe North Korea nor the Russians nor the Chinese possess a nuclear weapon that could wipe out all of Chicago. Chicago is a large metropolitan area and one ICBM with, like, I don't know. I mean, I'd have to look this up, but none of it's going to wipe out 9 million people with one detonation. They might die from radiation or fucking, you know, trampled on the escape route or, you know, whatever else. But they're not all going to die from that fucking blast. And a lot of those people are going to be able to escape, irradiated or not. Right.
Yeah.
Like it is like in the way of realism, I think it wants to punch you in the face with, like, a big, big number and say, take this very seriously. But then it doesn't do the thing that film is supposed to do, which is show you, right? Like, I don't know.
That you saying that about, like, these countries don't have the realistic capability. This reminds me of another nitpick I have about Top Gun Maverick. And I don't think it was you necessarily, but it was people like you who, like, when they saw the enemy's plane that
Sukhoi 57, of course, the
yeah. So people were saying, like, these countries don't actually have this capability. So if honestly, what the country it probably is based on this plane would be this. I'm like, no, the movie doesn't come out and say it for a fucking reason.
They're CG. Important. They look great. They look so fucking sick in Top Gun. They look awesome.
Doesn't matter.
From the future.
Doesn't matter. You're the kind of person that counts every bullet that goes off in a movie.
Okay.
You are not there. You are like this. And listeners, I'm like leaning forward with my fingers steepled.
Fingers tented.
Yeah. Instead of, like, most people who have a bag of popcorn, they're just like,
that's
wow!
Pretty cool. Like, they got those for real? And it's like, no, not really.
Yeah. No one
cares. there's like maybe like a dozen Sukhoi 57s like in real life. But again, I agree with you. It doesn't matter. They look very cool. That's fine.
So
right?
Let's bring this back to House of Dynamite. That is a very
a House of Dynamite.
I don't fucking care. Anyway, ooh. I was going to say this is a nitpick about, like, the country's nuclear capabilities. There's a nitpick for you, maybe some Radio Warner people, but I think in the grand scheme of things, it's just like your average viewer of this movie that's going to like this movie is going to be like, oh my God, no.
So let's talk about that real quick, because, like, well, should we let's finish up with the plot first. So
I,
like,
think we did.
I want to actually go through, like, the three.
Oh, right. Okay. So,
like, real quick. So like I said, it's basically three acts, but unfortunately they're all the same. Hold on. I closed my House of Dynamite
Wikipedia.
I was looking up Sukhoi 57 and then I was just scrolling through pictures.
So, yeah,
of the
Inclination is Flattening is the first one, and that's just about Rebecca Ferguson's character.
Oh God. Oh, they had names. Oh, they individually had names. Ugh.
Yeah, and then the second act was Hitting a Bullet with a Bullet, and that's where we learned that the missile defense system has a 68% or 62% chance of success. And what's funny there is there's, like, he's not an intern, but he's new to the NSA, the deputy advisor in the NSA. And he's, like, it's kind of comical. He's running to a meeting, so he has to take Zoom on his phone. And then he's going through security, and everyone's yelling at him because he's trying to talk to the
security. He's trying to stay on the phone.
Yeah, because he is – I liked what his character represented of, like, you need a young person thinking about this. You can't be, like, set in your old rigid ways, like the oh my God, the guy that Tracy Letts plays, the general who's just, like, so ready to preemptively strike whoever it could have possibly been that launched this missile. So this NSA guy, he does he, like, has to get on the phone with, like, the Russian foreign minister. And it basically is just, like, you know, breaking it down to, like, now then, Dmitry, you know how we've always talked about the possibility of something going wrong with the bomb. The bomb, Dmitry. The hydrogen bomb. Like, a whole fucking Dr. Strangelove bit. And it's just, like, chef's kiss. Because it goes, unlike the other stories, which only show you, like, if someone's on the phone you with somebody else, you only see one person.
Yeah, yeah, their standpoint. Yeah,
and in this, it does cut to Russia, and it's just like Russian people, like silently, like shrugging, like it's not me. I promise. This is not what my plan was.
One of my favorite things in like these movies is when they cut to the Russians is they always have like ornate wooden like desk with like gold like trinkets and shit on them. It's awesome. Like every single time it's like, ah, oh, yes, Russians. And they love Fabergé eggs and shit.
And while it doesn't really like get down to the Dr. Strangelove thing of being facetious, it does kind of capture the comedic tone of just like, what guarantee do I have that you didn't launch those missiles? What guarantee do I have that you won't kill us? Like, what do you... It's like, are you fucking with me? Do not be yanking my chain. Like,
Do not fuck me on this.
Yeah, that was the funniest moment because the Russians are sweating bullets because they're, the Air Force sends
there's like B-2 over. Bombers in the air with like nukes on them. By the way, you've referenced something that's very funny in this movie, which is like they keep doing like semi-comedic bits involving like Zoom calls, right? So somebody from fucking Russia calls, they get them on the phone, they can't patch them through to the president, so then they're in like a telephone situation. They have the young whatever the fucking he's the kid from Super 8, if you remember. He was in a good movie, which I guess they put him in here because they had to have like one like young hot guy. They have to have one like good looking guy to explain to these old farts, right, that like this is gonna kill everybody. But anyway, like he's on his way to work in the fucking super top secret NSA Zoom call, and he keeps getting disconnected. He's like walking, and then he has to go through the metal detector, right? And like, there's lots of, I guess, bits about Zoom, which is a little annoying. I don't know. Like the president's fucking webcam doesn't work, right? Like I don't know.
They could have done this all through Zoom. How awful would that have been?
Boop, 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 boop. Is that Skype?
That's Skype, I believe.
That's Skype. Never mind. So I think it's in the second act where we get the one of the most boring and annoying parts of the film, which is we get to hang out with Jared Harris, who's playing the Secretary of Defense.
That's act three, my friend.
Oh, God, that's act three. Well, whatever. Okay.
Well, we got to the end of act two. That's all that happens in act two. So act three is when we get to focus on the president, played by Idris Elba, and the Secretary of Defense, played by Jared Harris.
Do we need to talk about, like, our young buck deputy secretary guy, he gets to go into the super secret bunker situation room that you've seen from, like, the Obama pictures with, like, the whole Hillary and Joe Biden and all the Democrats are here for, like, when they killed Osama bin Laden.
When they assassinated Mayor McCheese.
You'll remember the interior of that concrete fucking hole. So he gets to go down there to have the rest of the Zoom call. And he's, I guess... He's supposed to be, I suppose, the like pacifist in the room, the one who's underlining over and over that like we don't know who did this, we don't know why, we're about to start World War III or just like nuclear holocaust, right? And then Act Three, we have the president, we have Jared Harris as Secretary of Defense, and I think in Act Three we have Tracy Letts as like Air Force Missile Command guy,
General.
I think
Anthony,
he might be the Navy. I can't remember.
He's General Anthony Brady, Combatant Commander of the United States Strategic Command, also known as
Stratcom. Yeah, Stratcom. Yeah. So he's like out in Kansas or whatever with the missile silos.
That he is only in Act Two.
Okay,
See him on Zoom in Act One, in person in Act Two. That's the other problem with this movie, is that if it were Rashomon style, it would be easier to keep track of all this stuff. But because it's all just one big Zoom call, sharing the same dialogue,
even within the acts, it jumps around. Because Act Two is, you're right, shared between the young guy and Tracy Letts, the Stratcom general or whatever.
Yeah.
Right. So it's jumping in between him walking around DC and like Zoom stuff, and then Tracy Letts like having a cup of coffee in like Nebraska or Wyoming or wherever the fuck all the missiles are. Right. And it's like, it's very like schizophrenic, to be frank.
And now, listeners, if you remember at the beginning of this episode, I referred to something that happens in all three of these, which is a noise is heard, and you hear the president go, "What the fuck was that?"
Or
what?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Well, Act Three is when we finally find out what that is. So the bomb is heading to Chicago, and it is revealed that Reed Baker, Secretary of Defense, his daughter lives in Chicago. So he texts his daughter, see on the phone that he's been texting his daughter, and his daughter doesn't want to talk to him. And so there's some hints that his wife had just passed. And so when he finally gets his daughter on the phone, there is like a hint of like, you know, you got to move on from mom. I don't think that's why they're not talking. I think maybe that because she's an actress in Chicago, that she's like, Dad, you have to stop bombing those countries.
she's woke.
Yeah. It's maybe not even woke because like her apartment in Chicago, it's like that's a amazing apartment in Chicago.
That's true.
High ceilings, ceiling to roof windows or floor to ceiling, floor to roof windows. Fuck me. Floor to ceiling. Whatever. Anyway. She's got a really nice apartment. So it's probably like Rosebud Baker. If you don't know who that is, she's the granddaughter of James Baker, and she writes for Saturday Night Live, or used to. That's the kind of vibe I got from her. Especially considering Jared Harris's character is Secretary of Defense Reed Baker, which is so funny.
So there's some allusions to real people.
Yeah. So Reed Baker and his daughter talk on the phone a little bit, and he doesn't let on that she's about to be incinerated by a weapon. And she's just like, I got to go with my boyfriend to work. And he's like, oh, does it sound serious? I'm American. And she's like,
She tells her dad that he needs to stop calling her and go to therapy, which is very funny. And he's just like a tear running down his cheek because he knows that she's about to be like, like vaporized.
Yes.
And he's like, you got a boyfriend, huh? That's really great. He's just like crying. And then
he starts walking up the stairs. They're evacuating him to the Raven Rock Mountain Complex bunker, and they have the helicopter. He's on the roof, and he just keeps walking past the helicopter. I'm like, sir, where are you going? And then he just walks right off the roof and dies.
Which I did not like. It's kind of in the background of the shot, so I must have been looking at my phone or something because I had to rewind to see what happened. And I was like, "Oh!" And that, and by the way, right? Like at this point, you're in Act Three. You've already gotten like. By the way, when Act One ends and it cuts to black, you don't see right because Act One is all the way until the nuke's supposed to hit Chicago. So you're like, well, I guess I'm about to see a nuke go off, right, or something happening. And it cuts to black, and we restart. You're like, oh, it's gonna be one of these, right? So. By Act Three, you feel thoroughly betrayed and you're already very bored. So when he walks off the roof, not only did I like chuckle, right? I felt absolutely nothing for this movie and anyone in it, right? By the way, in that universe, I had ceased to care that Chicago was about to be obliterated because the movie is balls, right? Like if you want the subtext of your movie to be like, guess that happened. Like, who cares, right?
We saw one person in Chicago, and they were so shitty to their dad that he killed himself. So if you see that, you're like, fuck Chicago. Fuck them and the bean they rode in on.
Americans, it is funny because, like, the takeaway, I think, at the end of this movie for me was, like, our state is utterly incompetent. It's full of a bunch of like assholes, and the people that live in America are also assholes, and they don't seem to be able to do anything right. And if they get nuked, they're just going to kind of like maybe blow up the world. They're certainly going to be unsure about it, right?
Yeah. If anything, this movie made me like kind of mad about government spending of just like, are you saying that we bought a anti-missile defense system for $10 billion and it's a fucking coin toss? Like, that's a line from the film.
Yeah, like, that's, by the way, Reed Baker, Secretary of Defense Reed Baker says that and says it three times, definitely isn't annoying.
Yeah, so you get no health care because we're spending billions upon billions on something that may not even work. It may kill you anyway, so you don't need health care because you're dead.
And by the way, know that internally to within the state, right, most of the people that the president will talk to on the phone are pushing him to nuke like every country on Earth as a response to this. And the film is incredibly clear that we know nothing, but he's like, they're urging him to just push like the red glowing button that's just like end the world, right? Like, by the way, if you ever wanted the MacGuffin of a film, if you wanted to see the stupid like laminated binder with the color codes, I shit you not, of like, there's even a joke. What is it like? Rare, medium, well done.
I call them rare, medium, well done.
God, please.
Grim.
Like, we're talking about nuclear annihilation here, right? And they're like cracking jokes about it, and it looks extremely shitty and stupid, which I'm almost positive, Connor, in real life, it probably does. If you ever wanted that to be like a physical object in a film and for you to be bored out of your mind looking at the end of the world, this film accomplishes that astoundingly, right?
Yeah.
Astoundingly.
I mean, we've also complained on prior episodes on this show of when the nuclear football has been portrayed, it's so unrealistic. And then we got the realistic and we're like, this sucks. It's just a blinder.
Again, if it had been a different, better movie, I think it would have been, you could have even played that for laughs, right? Where like, you don't make an overt joke, but it comes out and you're like, it's a fucking binder. It's like a piece of shit, just black, like three ring binder. Like, yeah, that's probably what it is. Anyway, one more complaint.
Yeah.
Idris Elba. The final scene of the film is Idris Elba in Marine One, the helicopter. By the way, hilarious scenes have happened with the helicopter, Trump and Biden both. He's in the helicopter flying with Mr. Captain Navy SEAL guy, the nuclear football carrying bro, right? And he's explaining to him the end of the world and which button to push. Idris Elba has a short soliloquy about how this is all very bizarre and alienating, and it's like the end of the world and it doesn't feel like it. He references listening to a podcast, at which point he says the title of the film, A House of Dynamite, and I groaned audibly.
Oh boy, yeah, this is a similar complaint that I had, and I told you this on our pre-production phone call of just like, that's the moment. Like, so first off, that third act where this is said, the third act is titled A House Filled with Dynamite.
Yeah, oh god,
so frustrating, so frustrating. So while he's talking about that podcast, I thought, if you're not going to mention the podcast, this is probably fake, so why not make this a moment of insight from the president? Like, why don't you have the president be the one to be like, it is as if we have built a house filled with dynamite.
Yeah.
And so you have the president sit in this moment of like, we are victims of a catastrophe of our own fucking making over generations. And instead it's just like, I heard on a podcast.
Yeah, it's just so embarrassing.
It was called Pod Save America.
Yeah. It's called the Joe Rogan Experience.
Yeah. It's so funny to think of like the president just like listening to a podcast for it. Like, he has this whole cabinet of advisors that are constantly advising him to like nuke the shit out of the world. So, and he's just like, I got to listen to a podcast to get my political insight.
He's jogging. I mean, it does, like, it reminds me of Obama and like the Zune and the playlist and like all of this, you know, attempting to like, through vehicles of PR, like humanize a politician, right? So somebody whose relationship you only feel through, you know, I guess lackluster 8 years following a historical like election, right? Like, yeah. And trying to make him just like a regular guy. And here we have Idris Elba talking about podcasts. Like, he didn't pull out his phone and show us his like Apple Podcasts app, right? But like, he could have, for all intents and purposes. Could've. He's certainly not doing like, he's,
yeah. the president's like, I heard on a pod, actually, hang on. Hey, can I have the aux?
Yeah.
You have Bluetooth? No Bluetooth? Can I see your phone? Hang on. I got to log into your Patreon. Hang on. I got to use my phone to the one time.
Oh, you don't. You don't have the podcast app set up? Oh, okay. Wait. So hold on. My earbuds don't work if you have both of them out.
And he's like, what operating system is on your phone? What is wrong with your phone? What is F-Droid? What is this?
I also don't know what this reference is.
Oh, well, but hey, shout out to the open source phone.
Cut this bit.
No. I want, if we have people that open source their phone like I do, that reminds me, dude. So I was at a work conference like a couple weeks ago. And I have like wiped Google from my phone. I use like an alternative operating system. I've hacked my phone up. And because of that, I can't access like a lot of apps, but it's fine. Like, I have alternatives. Everything's fine.
I know.
So I go to this conference and I'm just like, hey, do y'all have a schedule for everything? And they're like, oh, it's on the app. And I go, oh, my phone doesn't really do apps? And I'm like, what do you mean? And I'm like, well, do you have like a printout? And I'm like, oh no, it's just all in the app. And so I like, of course, went to this alternative app store, F-Droid. It's like, what are you talking about? What is the name of conference app? Like, I was so embarrassed, but.
What Connor really means is that he has a jitterbug, or like a he's got like an old people phone, or like a one of those prepaid fucking like Nextel phones. You're like, and you like flip your Motorola Razr open. You're like, can you just give me the fucking itinerary, please?
Yeah, my students are standing next to me, and they hear just like, where you at, man? Hey, I'm at a conference. I can't talk right now.
Oh my god. So we've been laughing about this, but I would like to let our viewers know that people are not buying this. Like I looked up the Google reviews for this, which is like it when you know I looked up the Google reviews for this, and it's at like 1.6 out of 5 stars. Like people have watched this and they hate it, which like viewer, by the way, we should have led with this. Do not watch this film. Do not waste an hour and a half of your life. Like, this is one of those where we take the bullet for you. People hate this shit, and I'm really glad that they do. This fucking shit sucks.
It's
and
getting
like
terrible reviews.
It's getting terrible reviews. And that's good, right? People should not watch this or like this. Because there's to me, right, any suspense, right, which I do promise does exist basically in the first act, right? The first time you see this series of events unfold to people who are like far away from it. Oh, by the way, including, right, like the failed intercept. They launched some interceptors at this ICBM, presumed ICBM, and they one of them like fails to separate and the other one doesn't hit it, right? And that's the, by the way, the plot point of the second act is a 25-year-old explaining it's like hitting a bullet with a bullet. That does, in the first act, generate some real drama. And by the third act, that is totally faded. So if the point that the film is trying to make is that, like, you know, nuclear war is crazy and we should do our best to avert away from this. And, right, trying to inhabit the space of nuclear annihilation, which, by the way, has been done so much better by so many other pieces of media back from the Cold War era, right? I think I just Threads comes to mind, right? And so much more viscerally in other less thoughtful pieces of media, like the fucking scene from Terminator 2 where LA gets nuked. I think it's LA, right? It is LA.
Yeah.
With that image of just like, you know, people just turning into skeletons, basically. So much more evocatively. This one fails to do by all metrics and will make, you know, nuclear war seem like a kind of a shrug your shoulders thing. I'm glad that people have viewed this and are like, this is garbage, right?
Yeah. Rightfully so. There's nothing fun about this movie.
There's nothing fun.
Like, on the surface, this movie, like, if you watch a trailer, you're like, this is something I can watch with my dad. Let's pop this on. And then there's no gun. There's no action. Yeah. Your dad's not going to like that.
And to be frank, right, like it, upon a if we do, I mean, I'm never going to rewatch this. Like upon further reflection, right, like filling this up with characters that don't seem to matter, i.e., like, you know, lady that's an expert on Korea, people's families, the random FEMA lady that gets like renditioned to the whatever the stupid bunker in Pennsylvania that they show, like all this superfluous shit. Like basically amounts to nothing. It waters down something that's already kind of like a kind of like without point. And it does in a way almost like a disservice to somebody taking this kind of shit seriously. But not me, baby. Right. I am taking this shit seriously because I actually like this is a little bit like schizo internet posting, but it's the kind of shit that like I could actually believe happens. Like within, I guess, like the deep state industrial media complex. So just let me paint you a picture. Right?
Okay.
So last month, dated, I think, October 25th, right? So like 2 weeks ago, right? Bloomberg drops an article that says, the title, Pentagon frets over, quote, House of Dynamite nuclear doomsday film. And in this article, they are reporting, it's not very long, right? They're reporting on a leaked internal memo by the Department of War and the Missile Defense Agency, which is like basically like connected to Stratcom, right? And it's part of the people that will do the intercepting and or launching of like our nuclear devices, right? Or oversee some of it. And they basically very publicly say, hey, one thing, we're not a bunch of morons, right? We're actually fairly well-staffed, and we're not going to piss our pants, as everybody in this movie does, when faced with a nuclear apocalypse. Which, by the way, it is like a nuclear-tipped ICBM, at least in theory in this film, or like everybody believes it is. I do believe people would piss their pants. Right? Like, that's believable to me.
Yeah.
And like, insisting that actually... The statistic that you're citing of 50% or 62 or whatever the fuck, right? Like that was from our prototypes, and actually the new ones when we test them, no citation, north of Grumman or whatever, like Boeing, we hit all of our targets, right? Like one, I think it insists a little bit too much, and two, the fact that they're reporting on this memo leads me to believe that there is something else going on here, right? And that like, if I were to divine like from the tea leaves, right? Like what do we have here? We have Netflix. We have Catherine Bigelow. We have in the era of like Trump, an attempt to pitch a film to liberals about how they actually need to think about nukes, right? Which I don't think have been on the menu since maybe like Trump. Like Trump won, Iran, North Korea, and then Biden yapping.
Well, let's not forget, like, maybe within the past month, sometime in October, before this movie came out, Trump authorized, like, yeah, we're going to start testing nuclear weapons again.
Yeah, I mean, but, like, I guess, like, in the public eye, I don't, yeah, maybe, right? Like, I'm thinking, like, in the 24-hour news cycle headline, like,
yeah.
Deal. It feels like nukes have been kind of out of our, the foreground, right, of, like, news for a while. Like and this report, right? Like the fourth thing, this article about this leaked internal memo, specifically not a classified one, so Bloomberg, right, like probably won't get in trouble for this. My schizophrenic conspiracy theory is that between Netflix and the CIA and Northrop Grumman, this is an attempt to drum up like public interest and a feeling of necessity for like Trump's Golden Dome, basically, right? Like this thing has already been pitched. A bunch of people have like salivated over the insane amount of money that like a new Star Wars basically program in the 21st century would be. They pitched this shit to Netflix and CIA connected Catherine Bigelow wrote and directed this piece of shit, right? And then they leaked a memo to Bloomberg that then, you know, basically didn't really make headlines about how actually this isn't accurate and we're very serious. And by the way, right, there's a lot of new the other thing that they go into is there's a lot of new allocation of spending to solve this problem if it does exist, right? Yeah. Like there is one serious point that could be that the film could have pointed out, which is that like our interceptor and nuclear capacity is aging, right? Which is like a thing that that missile manufacturers have long said, and we should probably think about, you know, a new revamped version of like old Cold War missile technology, interceptors, blah blah blah, right? Just like dollar signs for Grumman and Boeing and Lockheed Martin and like whoever else wants to get in on this, yeah. Right? I might be just a moron, and I'm kind of half joking when I say this, but like I think it's the only thing that actually like draws all these threads together in a way that makes sense to me.
Okay.
I'll leave the listener with that, right? Like, I don't know, Connor, if you have a take on my take, but that's my take.
Nah, man. It's got legs. I mean, Catherine Bigelow is incredibly connected, so maybe you've got something there. I think it's a mutually beneficial relationship. I also think that this is a movie that, like, I'm sure Bigelow is just like, thank God I got this thing made before the Pete Hegseth DOD. Like, it probably would not have been allowed. Like, they probably would not have gotten script approval for it to be so ambiguous. But I could be wrong. When did production start on this? That's May 2024. So, let's see.
Back in the Biden times. I will say, by the way, like,
it was in post-production by early December. So, they had filmed this thing before there was, like, a a changeover to the Trump administration.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, right, like Trump too has been a roller coaster. Nobody could predict what's like happened to the country in many hilarious and many not very funny ways. So like, yeah, I mean this, it, but that does, I think, to me, like illustrate the contribution that this has. So I guess your retort then is that Golden Dome had not yet occurred. the brilliance that is whoever whispered in Trump's ear and then him, you know, changing whatever the shit they told him to sound like the thing that he heard from Bibi Netanyahu, right? That hadn't occurred yet. But like, I don't know. I still believe it, I guess. I still believe it.
Yeah.
It seems right to me. And by the way, right, like another thing that I think I noticed, like recalling this movie, Connor, is that like this feels a little bit like it's in line with like COVID production movies. Does that make sense? Like so much of it happens indoors in like rooms with no windows
or on Zoom,
right? That it like harkens back to those like, you know, well, we have to make something this year, right? Like those style of films.
Yeah. It was just so interesting. Like Bigelow hadn't made a movie since like 2017, I think, with their last one, Detroit. So it's not, I don't know. She's just been hanging out. Nobody was asking, like, when are we going to get another one of these? It was written by Noah Oppenheim, who is former president of NBC News. I should have read up on the writer of this guy, or writer of this movie. Ronan Farrow says that the writer of this movie tried to shut down his reporting on Harvey Weinstein.
Hmm.
Ain't that something? President of NBC News. Writing movies for Catherine Bigelow.
He wrote the insane... Wait, this is so perfect. Oppenheim wrote the insane Robert De Niro president show. The one where he's Joe Biden and he's losing his mind and there's like a conspiracy against the fucking president.
What is this?
I saw a bunch of clips of it. It's Zero Day. Like other podcasts have talked about it. But it's like, it is like this insane, like Robert De Niro as Joe Biden president, possibly senile. And then there like literally is a conspiracy to like, you know, do a coup to him, Russiagate style.
Wow.
That's perfect.
Okay. Well, we'll have to do a deep dive on this guy because we're getting to the end of this episode.
See, I thought about doing Zero Day for the podcast, but then a bunch of other people like did it, right? They talked about it because Robert De Niro's in it, and nobody's going to talk about fucking a House of Dynamite.
Nah. Well, cool, man. I think we can go ahead and wrap it up. Do we have anything else that we want to add?
About the film? Not really.
Yeah, no, just to the podcast.
So basically, like from earlier, I mean, I don't know what our release schedule is going to be like. We will attempt to make episodes. We like doing the podcast. We haven't forgotten about it. It's just that kind of life is getting in the way.
Life is
sorry,
really
guys.
Getting in the way. Life is
also
really
Connor.
Getting...
Connor was also moving for like weeks on end. So like, it's just been hectic.
I was moving. I'm writing my thesis. Alec is having a child. We've been busy, so we're not, like, fighting. I didn't actually go into his house and poop all over the place. Alec won't let me use the bathroom at his place.
Hilariously, I do take some wicked dumps at Connor's house every time I'm there.
We don't need this.
Did I text you?
We're trying to get, like, actual filmmakers on the show, and if they listen to it and hear you going, like, I'm a doo-doo in Connor's
house.
They're
not going to listen to the end. Oh, I texted you, call me Gavrilo Princip the way I'm dropping dukes. I thought that was pretty good.
That is a good joke. That is
I had spicy buffalo chicken dip poop this morning.
we don't
really hurt
the detail, but what what'd you make
okay.
it for?
Is that, well, we had game night. We had Dune Imperium. We played Dune Imperium one last time before I had another kid. It was very nice. My boys sent me off. I cracked a couple brewskis, made my way through most of a six pack, and we blew through some Dune Imperium. It was a great time.
That's all.
None of them listened to the podcast, but thank you, boys. I appreciate it.
Have you told them about the podcast?
No. There are so nobody in my. I may be not the opposite of Connor, but like Connor is somewhat public about the podcast. I think with basically select friends. And used to be maybe on social media. I basically, there's almost nobody in my real life that knows that I do the podcast or listens to it because my politics are somewhat guarded, I would say, given my occupation and my surroundings and the general like political ambiance of Lake Charles, Louisiana.
Yeah. I don't know if I just need to completely shut it down or just like reveal my faith name and social security number.
I would hang on with that, Connor, as we don't know what's going to happen in the near
future.
True.
We've already had to pull a couple of episodes because we were like too spicy.
Oh yeah. You guys don't even know how many episodes. If you think the release schedule has been weird the past couple months, what the headlines were and imagine the kinds of podcasts that we would have recorded regarding those headlines that we have not released for reasons of our employment, for instance.
Yeah. So we have been recording. We just can't release certain episodes. Yeah. It's a bummer. And it's not
they were good ones. Trust me. They were good as fuck.
Once, maybe in 3 years, 7 years, we'll see.
Maybe something will happen in about 3 years that we can
maybe 2028. We can share some things. We don't know. No advocating for anything illegal. It's just like talking about propaganda.
This clip is just going to end. I would like to say at the end of the podcast, good things are happening. Connor and I have like long, like, I think personally, like discussed like our feelings about America and the future of politics. And I think I'm generally like a Debbie Downer about stuff. And you know what? Every time we have a week like this past week, I guess I'm referring specifically to Zoran Mamdani. I feel a lot more upbeat. Right. I feel like,
yeah,
maybe we can do something about the state of America and possibly even the world. To the positive. And I, you know, I like to acknowledge that it was a week that felt hopeful, right?
Yeah.
I by the way, Connor and I discussed it and then I heard it echoed in a bunch of different pieces of media. So like, I promise we're not copying anybody else. For those who know, I think I can't remember who said this. For those who know, they know it felt like Nevada. Right.
Yeah.
And everybody I think it was maybe Majority Report or somebody. It was maybe Emma Vinklin on Majority Report said, to those who know, when you say the words, it felt like Nevada, they know exactly what you're talking about.
Yep.
And that is a thing that I said to Connor before I heard it anywhere else. So yeah. I know that like a lot of people are feeling that vibe. And that's really good. And I'd like to say that on the pod.
The big difference between this and Nevada is Nevada was like, all right, we got one. Let's keep it going. Let's keep it going.
Yeah, yeah.
And this was just like, dude, they did it.
This is an actual dub. This is like, I mean, at least in small part, like crossing a finish line.
Yeah.
I mean, the work begins right after that, right? But you accomplished the goal at least electorally.
And I told you like this gives me a lot of hope for the people who feel like electoralism can no longer give them anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just, and this is a lesson that they will forget like that, you know, which is these things take time. Coalition building, like really, really making sure that people break down and debunk that, you know, anti-communism as religion, anti-socialism as religion in this country. Shout out Chomsky. If they can break that down, because that's hard work. That is incredibly hard work. But, you know, it's not lost on me that on the left, like, you know what, maybe socialism isn't that bad. And on the right, they're like, you know what, I'm going to stop, like you said at the beginning of the podcast, maybe we should stop criticizing people in our camp that say Hitler's cool.
I wish. Yeah. I mean, I hope for the future. And by the way, like specific to the podcast, maybe we'll have like a cutback. We didn't really talk about Zoran because, right, like neither of us live in New York. But having like watched some of it from the sidelines of living in Louisiana, like I say, right, like the propaganda surrounding both the primary and the general election were really nuts, right? And I mean the really heartening thing is when you see a failure of the really the most cynical and obviously like bought off media products and profit, right? By the way, like we never and probably never will talk about it unless we do an episode about AI specifically, the insane fucking like Cuomo AI slop that everybody hates, right? Mm-hmm. again, right, like the question of Israel, first and foremost as a question that you ask a New York mayoral candidate, right? Like that propaganda was wild in its failure. And in a way that I, like when I see that kind of stuff, at least like this past year when it happened, it really scares the fuck out of me because I'm so used to that kind of thing just being the end of like a movement, right? The end of a campaign, the end of, you know, of a certain a line of reasoning, right? Even about, you know, foreign relations or whatever, right? Like hitting some button that triggers, hitting some like propaganda button that triggers some reaction in the general public and them saying, oh, right, this is the terrorist stuff. This is what terrorists say. Oh, yeah, this is communism. Oh, yeah, this is a woke transgender, I guess, or some shit, right? Like, and that didn't work this time. And God damn, does that feel good?
Yeah. You know, smarter people than me can really break down. Did it work the last time, or were there many other factors at play that, like, you know, you and I both heard the Democratic Party just say, like, oh, we went too pro-trans. We went too pro-trans. Yeah. Like, how? I saw so many Democrat ads.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, you, like, last week you were like, hell no, they shouldn't be playing sports. You didn't have a trans person speaking to DNC. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? So it could be them just, like, making up excuses. Who knows?
Shifting the blame. I mean, I think that's, yeah, that's cynically or otherwise, there are fucking morons that actually believe that shit.
That's true.
But I think the serious actors that are propagating it from the inside, right, are absolutely cynical about it. Right?
It is unique to see a multi-generational and bipartisan rejection of old foreign policy norms. Yeah. That's just what we'll call it.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, okay. I'm also glad that, like I said, I'm glad that people can see electoralism works because I want to keep on podcasting. I don't want to, do a violent revolution.
I don't want to go to jail specifically. I don't want somebody knocking on my door or calling my employer about the stupid podcast that we do for fun, for no money, right? Like sharing our opinions to whatever 50 or 100 people want to listen to it.
That, like, don't even live in America. Like, we have.
By the way, didn't we get a bunch of listens from Langley, Virginia? Hi, CIA.
All right.
Hello, NSA.
Excelsior, propagandos, and as always, keep your eyes on the skies.